It's a privilege now to be able to address Drew and Natalie for the first time as husband and wife. And it's also a privilege to have with us today Drew's good friends and mentors from the Washington Oratory, Father Richard Mullins and Brother Benjamin Schulte. We have a nice connection with the ordinary, which is an Anglican connection, simply because one of our forebears, St. John Henry Newman, was a former Anglican. It's his movement from which this church was established. And St. Newman also became an Oratorian. What's also significant is that this just happens to be the 10th anniversary of this particular parish becoming Catholic, this parish whose history Drew has been so long apart. And so we gather here as those who are celebrating this conversion as we embrace that sacramental reality that is the particular providence of the Catholic Church. Now, having been Protestant myself, I spent some time under a pastor who was concerned about the prohibition of contraception that had been getting more and more hold in the evangelical world, something that the Catholic Church holds so strongly. And so he was a strong evangelical pastor, Bible-believing, Orthodox, but he made it one of his hobby horse issues to emphasize the fact that the primary purpose of marriage is companionship, so as to make it permissible that there can be contraception in the church. So is marriage about a felt need for partnership, or is it for child rearing primarily? And so traditionally, the Catholic Church presents the main purpose of marriage as follows. It is for the generation and nurturing of offspring. That's the primary purpose. The second purpose is the mutual help of spouses. And the third is the remedy for concupiscence. It was put forth similarly in perhaps a more beautiful language, certainly more beautiful language at the beginning of our worship today in our ordinary liturgy. But is this the most romantic way to describe marriage? Now, it's true, someone may reply, that, well, it's truth. We trust in this Catholic truth, and there's a measure of beauty in all truth. And I certainly agree. But something tells me that the way we define, the way we sum up marriage can be put forth a bit more beautifully than that. So is there a larger purpose to marriage that trumps all? Well, I believe there is if we simply understand the Blessed Virgin Mary as the model for marriage. Now, Mary is the model for marriage for both man and woman. And so one might ask, how can that be? Now, that sounds something that we would want to say as Catholics, something that is sentimental to us. But someone might also say, is that not a pious reading into the text that we read today? But the overarching model for marriage we see in our epistle, Paul's letter to the Ephesians, chapter 5, is that the model for marriage is Christ and the church. The Blessed Virgin Mary is the model of the church. She is the ideal Israelite, which came to fruition as she became the first Christian. And so throughout the Old Testament, Israel is referred to primarily by the prophets as God's bride. And by giving her unqualified yes to God, Mary fulfills this most of all. And so Paul begins his instruction about marriage by saying, "Be subject to one another out of reverence for Christ. And so as that first Christian prepared ahead of time to be the new Eve of the new Adam, the Blessed Virgin Mary has the greatest reverence for Christ of all. And so, yes, that leads us to the true overarching purpose of marriage that gets overlooked often in our theological debates. And that is that the ultimate purpose of marriage is simply to make us closer to Christ. And everything follows from there. And that is, in fact, what the old Baltimore Catechism affirms. And so ultimately, this is the true bond of love that makes our marriages most beautiful. The yes, the I do of Mary, is the model yes, the I do of the wedding vows that we witnessed today. So let's consider how this relates to the husband, first of all, and then to the bride. Husbands, love your wives, Paul says, as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her. As the husband is able to give himself up for his wife, only if he understands that Christ gave himself up for him. So a husband receives that love of Christ in order to give that love of Christ. And so there is no better model for receiving the love of Christ than Mary. So listen to this passage, which describes the church in this Ephesians 5 reading in the context of marriage. It describes Mary above all. Paul says, the husband is to love his wife that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and without blemish. Is this not how we often speak of the Blessed Virgin Mary, that model Israelite? She is a type of the church. She is the one who first of all was presented without spot or wrinkle, holy and without blemish, even by virtue of her immaculate conception. And so as we speak of the Blessed Virgin Mary as the first Christian in this way, by extension, the husband is part of that church modeled by Mary. He is being sanctified the way Mary was sanctified ahead of time. And having received this ministry, he passes on the same to his wife. And this is important. This must come first, because we can't give what we don't have. So at first glance, it might seem a little bit confusing to say that Mary is the model for the husband. But we can summarize the whole dynamic like this. A husband is called to be a husband by being a bride. That's right. Mary modeled total dedication to God, total reverence to Christ by saying yes to the incarnation. And in this, all of us who are in the church become brides of Christ. She lay everything down and subject to Christ. And that's what a husband is called to do in service to his wife. And in this sense, Mary was a model to Joseph. He saw her yes in the most difficult of circumstances. He saw her total dedication. And in this, she was able to communicate Christ to him. And this in turn strengthened the yes of Joseph so that he could protect his wife, be dedicated to her, and then in turn communicate that fidelity of Christ to her as well. So likewise, today in all of our marriages, a husband is called to imitate the yes of Mary, to give everything to Christ and receive him. And in so, the husband becomes sanctified by Christ, and he is able to incarnate Christ by walking the way of Christ, of the cross, by representing Christ to his wife, by laying down his life for her. This is how he puts his wife first. As Paul says, husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church. And so this creates the context so that the wife can live out her calling as well. In this way, the husband, having Mary as model, is able to become that leader to which the wife is able to be subject. This helps us to understand what it means for a wife to be subject to a husband. A wife is subject to a husband who is first subject to Christ. So, naturally, the woman is also called to be like Mary, who was subject to Joseph out of herself being completely subject to Christ. She can be subject to her husband because his only aim is to bring her along the same path that he is walking, which is growing closer to Christ. The husband is being washed like Mary, so his only goal is to wash his wife in the same way. But having received this ministry, the wife communicates Christ to her husband. And in this way, her Marian role is clear and straightforward, is it not? Much like Mary communicated Christ to Joseph in her meekness and docility, she communicates Christ to her husband in this mutual upbuilding of the church. So let's look at an important encyclical from 1930. Casti Connubii, which means of chaste wedlock, put forward by Pope Pius XI. Here's what he said. The outward expression of love in the home demands not only mutual help, but must go further, must have as its primary purpose that man and wife help each other day by day in forming and perfecting themselves in the interior life, so that through their partnership in life, they may advance ever more and more in virtue, and above all, that they may grow in true love towards God and their neighbor. This is that reverence for Christ that Mary modeled by being wholly dedicated to God. This is the mutual submission as each spouse lays down his and her desires for the other. This results in both of them growing closer to Christ. So the encyclical continues. This mutual inward molding of husband and wife, this determined effort to perfect each other, can in a very real sense, as the Roman Catechism teaches, be said to be the chief reason and purpose of matrimony. Now, interestingly, it was in response to the Anglican Communion permission of contraceptives that this encyclical was put forward. That was the context. It was a response to that. It stressed the sanctity of marriage, this encyclical, prohibited Catholics from using any form of artificial birth control, and reaffirmed the prohibition of abortion. It also explained the authority of church doctrine on moral matters and advocated that civil governments follow the lead of the church in this area. So how appropriate to quote this encyclical on this 10th anniversary of this parish leaving that Anglican Communion. And so it is also, we might note, the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. But you will know this from this day forward as the anniversary of Drew and Natalie together. This is a day when we celebrate new life, truth and beauty together. They have come in the context of affirming life in the truth of the Catholic Church. And this comes from reverence of Christ above all, as modeled by Mary. The yes of Mary has become their yes to God that is behind the yes to each other in their wedding vows. And there is nothing more beautiful about marriage than that.